This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects. They can be serious, they can be ridiculous, but there is one rule. Unlike most lecture series, the speakers cannot be professionally expert in the topic on which they are lecturing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience, and then we put it all together into a podcast for you. If you've got questions about Trampoline Hall, about the show, we would love to hear them. You can reach us by Facebook or Twitter or find us on the web. This one comes in from Ben Stevenson via Twitter, and he asks, how have Misha's feelings toward his introduction evolved or not evolved after giving it so many times? So once again, if you're just following the podcast now, at the live show at Trampoline Hall, I give a very long introduction, like a 10-minute introduction. It's kind of more or less the same at every show. I guess it evolved over time early on, and early on it evolved for real reasons, which was to try and make the show better by getting people to ask good questions during the Q&A. But over time, increasingly, what people do in Q&As hasn't really changed that much. So the introduction has remained pretty much the same. It's remained pretty similar. And I guess there's a couple of ways in which it's changed. One is, I think, for the first couple of years, a lot of my demeanor on stage is that I appear very nervous. And for the first couple of years, it's because I was very nervous. I was just very frightened. And I thought, well, the whole show seemed to be about being scared. And so it seemed like a good idea to not conceal that fact in myself and let my fear be part of the show, just like the lecturer's fear was part of the show. Over time, I suppose I can admit I've gotten less frightened. I mean, having done the thing for many, many years, I sort of feel like I know the range of possible things that could happen. And even if there were a terrible show, I'd be like, well, you know, we've already had 12 years of good shows or whatever. So partly I'm not as scared as I used to be. But in a way, also, as I've become less scared, in some ways it also becomes scarier. Because increasingly, I'm doing something which no one really wants to do, which is I'm giving a 10-minute talk, which is full of jokes. And I'm making those jokes to people who have, in many cases, heard those jokes like a dozen times before. And I think if you ask any performer, like, is that something you want to do? I think any performer would say, no, that sounds like a terrible thing to do. But somehow the show has evolved in such a way that I put myself through this ordeal of having to do this terrible thing of trying to entertain people by telling them the same jokes they've heard many, many times before, month after month after month. I don't know what purpose this serves in the show, but it does seem sort of notable that the show starts off with me doing this sort of slightly uncomfortable and difficult thing. So there you go, Ben. I hope that answers your question. On a related note, in terms of that introduction, Anthea Foye also asked about the intro, about the show intro, and she wanted to know if we could hear more of it in the podcast. I think we will be putting that up soon as a special episode, probably in the next few weeks, I think. All right, well, that's enough of that. That takes us to our lecture. The lecture is entitled Laughing in Public, and the lecturer is Aliya Pabani.
So in my second year of university, I got really into this show, 6 Feet Under, which for those of you who haven't seen it, it's about a family who runs a funeral home. And I decided that I actually wanted to get into funeral studies as well, but I wanted to provide these like alternative corporate funeral retreat hybrids where people could go and do team building events to build morale about death. So I remember I was in the car with my dad when I told him about my idea, and he was mostly nonplussed, but cautiously interested, the way that he usually is when I tell him about new career ideas. So then I asked him, do you mind if I do your funeral? And he said, sure, yeah, you could do that, but I want to be cremated. And so I said, yeah, we could do that, but, you know, like, where would you like me to scatter your ashes? And then he got really serious, and he looked me in the face and said, Aaliyah, I want you to go to the park, and I want you to throw my ashes on white people. Yeah! So, 10 years later, and this remains one of the not only one of the funniest things I've ever heard him say, but one of the few exchanges with him that I can actually remember in any detail. I responded with a kind of laughter that you can't stop doing, even though it like physically hurts you. So for this talk, I decided to figure out what exactly this makes. What makes this so funny to me, which is risky because it's in my top 5 casual party anecdotes. And if you've ever tried to explain a joke, you realize how quickly it could die. But so I thought about it and I realized, so there's this element of it, which is there is an unexpected turn. So a dad tries to make small talk with his daughter and ends up revealing a dying wish that his oxidized corpse be thrown onto white people. But then there's another kind of less obvious aspect to it or contour, which is that my dad's experience of being in this country has largely been shaped by being an outsider. And that gives rise to a kind of urgent laugh. It has like there's an empathy element, but there's a kind of urgency about it. And it's kind of like, it's uncomfortable, which makes it even more funny. It's like the feeling of being tickled. So in our culture, we have a lot of common words to refer to this kind of inappropriate laughter. When we laugh at things that are morbid, we call it black humor. When we laugh at things out of something other than pure amusement, we call it nervous laughter. But I wondered why it is exactly that laughter is the expression that comes out in those moments. So I did a bit of research. And I do like scare quotes because basically I just went on Wikipedia and like if there weren't problems with the article, I used it. And I found that there were lots of theories of laughter that talk about laughter as a means of getting relief from some kind of tension. So that tension is actually a kind of necessary element for laughter to occur, which I thought was kind of interesting. This is, I think, why it's so hard not to laugh when you're being attacked by a small child. So, like, there's the element... So your brain understands that you're under attack, but there's also the added tension of knowing that it's socially unacceptable to hit a child. So... So the areas of our brain that are actually responsible for laughter lie deep in the subcortex of the brain, which is a kind of evolutionary ancient part of the brain that's responsible for reflexes and things like breathing. So what that means is it's far away from the parts of the brain that are kind of more mature evolutionary behaviors like language and memory. So this might be one of the reasons why it's so hard to stop laughing at something even though you know it's inappropriate. So about 2 months ago, I was actually sitting in this very audience listening to a talk by a lecturer called The Lost Art of Making Fun of People. And in it, he spoke about... he made some provocative statements, including suggesting that everybody should be made fun of equally regardless of their identity, and that contemporary PC culture had no sense of humor and took offense too easily. And he made some interesting points, including, and I paraphrase here, my kids are brown, my wife is brown, I'm from an island, I'm basically brown too. And he was a white guy. And while most of the audience laughed, I kind of sat on the side over there trying to figure out what to do with my face, because he had basically set up a situation in which you could either laugh or you could take offense and be thus responsible for ruining humor for everybody. The thing is I don't think that people respond immediately with offense. I think that there's something that happens before that on a kind of more gut feeling reaction, the level of reaction. So I think there's a kind of like social sorting that occurs at the moment of public laughter, where some people have a distance or a vantage point on the subject matter enough to be able to laugh at it, and other people don't. So there's this other theory of humor called the benign violation theory. And in it, basically the theory states that two conditions need to be simultaneously occurring in order for laughter to occur. So the first condition is that there needs to be a perceived threat that alters the individual's understanding of the way the world ought to be. And the second condition is that the person must perceive that threat to be benign. So it's the tension between these two things that causes something to be funny. If the threat isn't perceived to be benign, then the subject just sits in that first condition where it's actually just a threat. So we like to think of laughter as something that is a reaction to something that's funny, but actually, as my research states, that's not actually the case. There was a study done where they recorded hours and hours of conversation at in classrooms and cocktail parties, and they found that most people laughed after normal to moderately funny statements like, "Look, it's Andre." just wait for you guys to calm down after that. are you sure? And you don't have to drink, just buy us drinks, which is like a pickup line from the 70s, I guess. I don't know. So since I've started researching this topic, I've actually begun paying more attention to the instances where I laugh in public, which is a lot. And like, I've actually laughed at things as banal as like, "I'm really busy marking exams this holiday." So the neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran theorizes that laughter evolved as a signal to ourselves and others that what might appear threatening actually isn't. He writes, "The sound of laughter evolved to inform our kin who share our genes that it's a false alarm." So in this light, nervous laughter can be seen as a warning to ourselves that the terrible things we've encountered isn't really as bad as it seems, which allows us to create some distance between ourselves and the perceived threat. So a couple of years ago, I went to go see the movie 12 Years a Slave in theaters. And for those of you who haven't seen it yet, this might contain a small spoiler. So if you'd like to go into the other room, please do that now. Okay, so there's a scene in the movie where this sadistic slave owner forces the protagonist of the film, who is a free man from the North, who was captured or kidnapped and sold to slavery in the South, to whip another enslaved woman who has been raped and abused by the slave owner. And so to say this scene is uncomfortable, but would be like a gross understatement. I ended up involuntarily sobbing during that scene, which is not common for me because usually I'm able to preempt crying at the movies by noticing the construction of the scene. So I'll be like, "Oh, that music is really sappy," or "Look at that slow pan, that seems so intentional and manipulative." But what makes this situation even more odd was that while I was sobbing in my seat, there were people in the audience who were audibly laughing. And so I understand that that laughter was likely not about amusement, but of a feeling of discomfort that people needed to get some relief from. But in that audience that was kind of sparsely populated with mostly white people, I felt really exposed. So one criticism I've heard leveled against the movie 12 Years a Slave is that the portrayal of the South as this kind of like bad next door neighbor allows for the northern states to be seen as a kind of socially progressive haven for the mostly white liberal audience that would go to see the film. And this kind of obscures the ways in which the North was actually benefiting from slavery at the time through the exchange of raw materials from the mostly agrarian South. Similarly, if you've seen the film, the jarring presence of producer Brad Pitt as the hot savior Canadian carpenter who saves the protagonist might be seen to obscure the ways in which slavery existed for a couple of centuries in Canada as well, in New France and in Lower Canada under British rule. So I'm going to argue that the uncomfortable laughter is a similar kind, there's a similar kind of obscuring happening in that moment. I think my theory about that laughter is that it allowed people to kind of distance the perceived threat in order to kind of obfuscate the ways in which the history being portrayed is being enacted in the present. So I feel like I should say at this point that I don't hate laughing. I'm the kind of person who has had to leave parties early because my face hurt too much from laughing and I couldn't socialize anymore. But like, yeah, it's basically a really cheap form of therapy and I use it a lot. There's even a form of therapy called laughter yoga, which was made popular in the mid-90s in India by a doctor. And for those of you who haven't heard about laughter yoga, it basically involves people standing in a circle and stimulating real laughter by making eye contact and fake laughing with each other. And a handful of studies have shown that it has actual tangible health benefits, like better cardio health and improved mood. And apparently that laughter produces an endorphin-mediated opiate effect, which even though I don't know exactly what that means, it sounds like something I want. So the thing is laughter is a social behavior with implications beyond our individual well-being. There might be other considerations at play. The Prophet Muhammad once said, "Do not laugh too much, for verily excessive laughter kills the heart." And in his commentary on the Prophet's statement, Ustad Faraz A. Khan writes that excessive laughter can distract a person from reflecting on matters of significance, like, quote, "Wars, disease, famine, crime, economic crises, the waning of the planet's resources, corporate hegemony, moral degradation, the looming catastrophe of global warming, and overall environmental damage," end quote. That's real. I didn't make that up. So I'm not advocating that we somehow replace laughter with deep and serious thought about all the things that are fucked up about the world, but I do think it's important to reflect on why we laugh in particular instances. So if we laugh for relief, then what or sometimes whom are we seeking relief from? Thank you.
Aliyah Pabani, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Are there any questions?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yes, yes, you mean.
Do you remember any of the things that made you laugh so much at the party?
What were the things that made you laugh so much that your face hurt at a party?
I have a theory about it that I didn't include in the talk because it made me sound disingenuous, but I think that I'm very generous with laughter. Like, I can fake laugh really well, and I actually have a trick where, so to relieve the tension in my face when I've laughed, fake laughed too much, I have this trick where, like, if someone says something to you and you can't physically laugh anymore, you just kind of throw your head back. And then when you come back, you're kind of smiling. I didn't do it that well, but you can imagine, like, when I'm in full party mode that it really works. So, yeah, I think it's mostly, like, when I fake laugh too much, because I think that maybe I overdo it a little, like, I ham it up.
So, wait, are you saying that that's what causes you to laugh? Like, what causes you to hurt your heart isn't the real laughter, but it's the, like... That's the remedy that exacerbates the problem? Is that...
That's my theory, but I feel like those two things are so intertwined, like, I don't know what's real anymore.
Whoa. Oh, all right.
I'm so fake.
All right, well, if you have any other questions now that you know old Faco is on stage, you want some insincere answers, just fire away. Yes, over there. Thank you.
Are you taking funeral team building bookings?
Are you taking bookings for funeral team building?
I freelance, so I'm always open to... Yeah, I actually did it as a job at a resort for a while, so I have some, like, handouts.
Wait, wait, you did funeral team building at a resort?
No, I did. I had a job at a resort where we did corporate team building, okay. And I was like, oh, this would be great for a funeral.
So if you just added, you would just, like, search and replace and just put in funeral.
Yeah, totally. just like, kind of change it. Be like, oh, be aware that people are grieving, like, maybe no leapfrog or something.
It's the idea that would it be bringing the corporate team building stuff to the funeral, or would it be bringing the funereal element to corporate team building?
I think more corporate, like, I would say 79% corporate team building and, like, whatever's left funeral.
So 21.
Yeah.
Okay. So all right. So you'd be going to an existing funeral, and you'd be like giving name tags and having people, like, do.
I think it should be in the woods, probably.
Okay, all right, cool.
We could drive hearses to, like, the wilderness.
It is my inclination to pursue this chain of inquiry for the rest of the Q&A, but I feel that I am perhaps alone in that, so let's see what anyone else wants to know about. Are they there? Yes, yes, you ma'am.
Have you actually considered fulfilling your father's wish to throw his ashes onto white people?
Have you considered fulfilling your father's wish to throw his ashes onto white people? First of all, is he still alive?
He's alive, okay, yeah. Right. I invited him, but he's in a different country.
So. I thought you invited him, but he was like, gonna be any white people there? Oh yes, there are white people to be found at Trampoline Hall. Oh yes, there are.
I actually brought his urn.
You know what? No one has ever lectured twice at Trampoline Hall, but I would make an exception. Just think about it. Just you and your dad want to talk it
Thank
over.
Thank you.
So the question was, what was the question, have you considered it? Are you going to do it? Would you seriously consider throwing his ashes on white people?
No, because I think with any, like, I think about it in the same way that I think of humor, is like, if it's not transformative in any way, what's the point?
Do you really believe that it would not be transformative?
I mean, do we mean physically or symbolically?
You have a high bar for transformation.
Yeah, I don't think that I would actually seriously consider it, and, like, a big part of me believes that he was just joking.
Right. He was just joking. All right, so there you go. So no is the answer. I'm going to paraphrase that answer as no. Anything else you would like to know? Yes, yes, you ma'am.
How do you know when to fake laugh?
How do you know when to fake laugh? Do you mean as opposed to real laugh or when to not laugh?
As opposed to not laugh.
As opposed to not laugh. Okay, thank you.
I don't know if I've ever experienced the not laugh condition.
So you're the person who is like, they were like, hey, it's Andrea, and you're like, it's so funny because
totally.
It's like Andrew but French.
Yeah, we're like, yeah. We're looking for Young Street. I think that when I choose not to laugh, it's because of what I said, where like something actually just really hurts in a deep way. I'm happy to give away laughs for people so that they feel good. I don't give a shit, really, because I've got that. Then I just sleep when I get home. But yeah, like it's mostly just in situations where it's not a conscious decision. Like I said, it's just like it just feels too close to home, and you just can't.
So there's times that you don't laugh.
Yeah, the like during that trampoline hole talk.
Right. So that was the time. So during that talk, you were like, this not funny, not laughing, no real laughing, no fake laughing. You were like, shh.
Yeah. I mean, if I could conjure it, I would. And that's the thing about the idea that it's offense that's ruining humor. I think for a lot of people, like, I didn't necessarily feel offended.
Right.
I felt uncomfortable. I was like, I'm on the ledge and people can see that I'm not participating in this and, like, I'm PC culture or whatever.
Right.
I'm not.
Right, which doubly...
which nothing is PC culture.
Right, which, like, doubly makes it, like... smattering of applause
yeah.
from the people who aren't PC culture in the front of the room.
People don't like PC.
The rest of the room would identify themselves as PC culture, so they were hurt. They were like, but how can we go about censoring the truth everywhere it's expressed? So in that example, your response, it's not even so much that you were trying not to laugh, is that you actually would have laughed if you could. Is that right?
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, let me see if I can fake laugh. Nope. Is it like
yeah,
that?
It's just like feels just sad. I don't know. Like sadness. Sometimes you laugh at things that are sad, like conversations on this streetcar where people are like two men are like giving each other dating advice or something.
That is funny. It is funny when there's two men on the streetcar that in itself is sad, I suppose. Men talking about their feelings in public. Pretty sad.
No, it's great. I encourage it, but it's funny.
What was it? Can I ask you more about the trampoline? I mean, I kind of want to talk about the trampoline hall lecture because I was because it's an experience that we share,
mm-hmm.
but from a different perspective. But I was there,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm curious. You know what? I'm just curious. By show of hands, how many people recall were at that lecture? So a few people, not a ton. Okay, so it's not like we all remember this, but I remember it. And you were like, and so what was your experience? So that guy was on stage, and for those who were not here, which is most of you, my impression at the time was that it was awkward. Was that we all understood, like, oh, something awkward, something weird is going on here.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think that what the audience was doing that kind of weird, like, nervous laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think the speaker might have been thinking more like, oh, they're finding me really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of what the audience was thinking was like, I don't know what's going on. You know?
Yeah, totally. I would agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And so what... I guess I want to know more about what you were thinking during that moment, if I can ask you, because it's helpful to me in my job.
I don't know, like, when will this be over? I don't know, like,
right.
I wasn't, like, it's just one of those situations that happen where, you know, you can't really even nervous laugh or something.
Right.
And so you're just kind of like, what time is it?
Okay.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to punch up, actually. I think a lot of humor, like, punching up is like, you know, if
punching
I made that
like,
joke about white people,
right,
like, it's funny because it's a different power dynamic, you know? And if you're punching down, like, it's like an entirely different thing.
It's a real difference, right? But that guy saying, like,
yeah.
I'm basically brown and being like, well, there's something wrong with that. But then your dad being like, I would like my ashes thrown at white people. That's how much I hate them. And we're all like, oh, that's a good one, you know? And but it's interesting. But I think that what explains that if there is a difference is the punching up, punching down
mm-hmm.
thing. Is that right? Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't be funny if your dad was white and said, I would like my ashes thrown at black people.
Yeah.
That would no longer, would not be a funny joke.
And, you know, it's fair that people might not find it funny. Like,
yeah.
It's fair that people might be offended by that as well, but like I said, like I think it is really important to think about why we don't find something funny.
Yeah, here's a question. So one thing that I was thinking of in the trampoline hall that you were at where that was going on and that I think about more as you talk about it is one of the things that's tricky is that laughter is very audible and silence is not.
Mm-hmm.
So if half the people are kind of like chuckling, like maybe half the people are laughing, maybe of those, half are chuckling in horrible discomfort and half of them are just like... You're like, it's true, blondes mm-hmm. are hilarious. But then the other half of the audience is kind of doing what you're doing of being like, this isn't funny. We don't hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to know how that how that gets expressed or
right.
whatever. I guess that one of the things I'm thinking about, I'm sorry, I'll stop asking about this particular instance, but I'm interested in what happens at Trampling Hall. So one of the things that I'm interested in is to say to you guys, to say to this audience, only one thing I could do for this space is like, you should always feel free to say, like, I knew that people were upset after that show. And one of the things that made me feel weird as the host of Trampling Hall is I like to imagine that what happens at Trampling Hall is that people see things and sometimes things piss people off, and then people say, hey, that thing pissed me off. And that's part of what I think is cool about Trampling Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what made me feel weird about that show was that I felt like people were pissed off, but somehow no one said it
mm-hmm.
at the show. And it made me feel like something wasn't working right. And I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think the Q&A format is kind of by its nature imperfect. And, like, I can only
take your time. whoa. Slow down. Punching up. That's hard.
punching down.
Bro. Q&A hosts are right there. That's all the time we have.
No.
go on.
Yeah, I just think for me with Q&As generally I need a second to like formulate my thoughts. Like I can only speak for like why I didn't. I respect everybody's right not to say something in a public forum because those dynamics are still at play in these spaces. If you've just watched everybody laugh at something you find really hurtful, you're not going to be like, oh,
yeah.
You know, unless...
Let me ruin everybody's good time.
Yeah. Because you're probably not that guy who's like, I'm going to respond with a comment or whatever.
Right.
But... You know, I don't know, maybe there could be, like, other things, like if there was, like, a gong or something. That you could be, like, just walk up. Like, I could have done that. But or you could offer Trampoline Hall lectures to people who have, like, unresolved feelings.
Well, that was in fact, yeah, so yeah. There we go. So we're happy to give
so
you
it's, yeah,
right.
resolved.
Okay, well, on this particular issue, do your feelings feel reasonably resolved?
Yeah, I mean...
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I got to complain about it to a new audience.
So. Okay. Awesome, great. Yes, question over there, yes.
Okay, so I'm wondering, as a close friend who has seen you do the throwback laugh at several of my jokes.
You've seen that throwback laugh at your own jokes,
yes. How often is that genuine?
Let me try and think of the ways in which you can tell.
Someone else wants to know. Wait, who else? Wait,
I got all my buds here.
Oh my God, look at how many people thought they were your hilarious good friend. And it turns out all you fall for them is a warm, abstract sympathy.
Okay, well, if I throw back and come back with like an open mouth smile, that's a fake one. But if I come back with like convulsive laughter, that's like normal me.
That answer is obviously completely sincere and trustworthy, like everything else about Aaliyah. All right. You're in a real quandary now. How are you? All right. So, yes, you, sir.
So in movies, when it feels like you're actually alone, they always laugh and I think, now after having seen this, I'm going to have like a sympathetic reaction. So there's a biological imperative. Means that, like, do you think that it could be like that?
So wait, is a cartoon villain's laugh actually a cry for help? Is that your question?
I mean... Yeah, I read somewhere, and this is again my research, but that prolonged laughter in inappropriate scenarios maybe be like evidence of your of like some problem you have with like empathizing or engaging with the scenario. So, you know, the villain is also can be like I don't really believe in the idea of like an evil villain. I think it's often just someone with certain social conditions who is an outsider and thus driven to that role.
To maniacal.
So, yeah.
So, yes.
So, I think you should feel bad.
Feel sorry for the laughter of the maniacal villain, Pete. Feel bad. Yes.
So, one thing you never talked about, which I'm curious about your relationship with professional comedy or just going to a place like Comedy Bar, because people often say that comedy is a thinking man's sport, but...
It is a thinking man's sport.
I didn't know comedy was a thinking man's sport. I thought that was lacrosse.
So just, do you seek out comedy or kind of like what?
Do you go out to comedy bars? Do you like seek out comedy?
I don't really seek it out, but I have come upon comedians that I like, but it's not something I know a lot about. So I'm open to suggestions if during the break people want to come up to me with things.
Drawn to going to, like, you just like laughing at
you them. Like laughing
it's,
this person is perplexed. He's like, if you like laughing, why don't you go to comedy bars? They're all about laughing. You should do that.
I get it on the streetcar.
Right, yeah, you can just laugh. Exactly.
But no, I think I think the problem with like me not knowing that I like a comedian ahead of time is it's always a crapshoot. Like, I've been to an amateur night at like Stella on Lansdowne in St. Clarence. It was like the worst experience of my life. Like, we had to slow clap, and then we got into like a standoff with the comedian where he refused to continue until we let, like, it was just bad. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes, I'm up here. Yes.
How do you feel about laugh tracks?
How do you feel about laugh tracks and TV shows? What function do they serve?
I mean, I think they're kind of like, I can't think of any like current shows that use laugh track, no?
Big Bang Theory.
Does it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. So I don't watch that show. I guess it probably played...
That's a
like,
good
this
thing,
is,
actually.
This is me just like speculating, but probably it played a certain kind of instrumental role in teaching people what to laugh at a certain point in time.
And you figure now we know we don't need to be told what to laugh at anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that there is some kind of like consensus on what's funny, or we're just given more leeway to laugh at.
So that's nice. So that's nice. So laugh tracks were something that was necessary to teach us how to enjoy television, yeah. But now that we can enjoy television unassisted, largely unnecessary. Is
yeah,
that
okay? Maybe.
All right, sure. Okay, good enough. Yes, you, ma'am, over here.
What do you want us to do with your body?
What do you want us to do with your body when we die?
For roll-ups, I think. I don't know. You know that Sodalicious commercial where they're like two-dimensional and then they have like a Sodalicious and I want you to do the reverse of that.
I think I'd like to end with that image.
Yeah.
We'll wrap it up there, ladies and gentlemen. Aaliyah Pabani, ladies and gentlemen.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecturer was chosen by Eula Benevolsky. If you enjoyed the podcast, why not let other people know about it? If you go on iTunes and leave a review, we would really appreciate it. It really helps get the word out about the podcast. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Trampoline Hall is a Sumo Audio podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook. Sumo Audio has another great podcast. It's about chips, the kind you eat, not the kind in your computer. It is called justchips.com. You might want to check it out. I am Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.